First ordinance for its second reading is ordinance 2016-12. This is an ordinance amending the official zoning map for service area 1 of the Petersburg Borough to rezone parcel 01-014-125 at 919 Sandy Beach Road from public use to single-family residential. I'd entertain a motion to adopt resolution 2016-12 in its second reading.
So move.
Second.
Moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Lynn to adopt resolution 2016-12 in its second reading. Discussion?
I continue to be confused about the process that we have here because this is the first time that I can recall that planning and zoning failed to promote something and then it moved forward to the assembly for discussion. And I believe that the process that's supposed to happen and I would like to see happen in the future is when something comes to us from planning and zoning, there are supposed to be some findings of fact. There was some analysis by staff, but I don't believe that planning and zoning itself gave us specific rationale laid out as findings for their decision, and that's what we're supposed to be basing our decision on. I looked again at this parcel. At the time that this was zoned public use, the zone single family was also in existence, and that was not chosen for this parcel. I believe the intent for this parcel was to be in public use, and so that is the way that I will be voting.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the resolution?
Yeah.
Eric?
Yeah. I too kind of went and toured that that property. I took my laser rangefinder out there and I shot a site to the Black Rock with the petroglyphs on it, and it's 720 feet from Sandy Beach. And went and walked over there. And my major concern with rezoning this from public use to single family residential would be how a large residence there could impact the character of that point. We only have one petroglyph within walking distance of town. We only have these fish traps that are right there. But when I went there and I looked at the layout of the property lines, and your view shed as you're looking at the beach wouldn't be staring at the big window picture windows of a large residence. You would be looking right past it. And also, from the petroglyphs themselves, it would be over 150 feet to where the property line is, to where they'd want to likely put their residence, which is further than the closest existing residence. So when I took that into account, I didn't think about it because, you know, I guess when I'd gone there before, I just kind of felt so in awe of, you know, the ancient artifact that I didn't think about all these other buildings that were already right there. I felt like it had the character that I was looking for when I went and sought out that area. After reanalyzing it and pondering on this, and having toured that land and how it's not really public usable, there's not really a great access point from the sandy beach to the beach. You know, it really just feels like when I went in there, I felt awkward, like I was in the backyard of two residences that were there. I felt like I was kind of intruding, so it just felt awkward, and I walked away. I feel that if a residence were put there, it could be, could benefit the borough financially and wouldn't affect the character of Sandy Beach Cove or of the petroglyphs in specific. So I'll be voting to convert it to single-family residential.
Good idea. Point of clarification, Member Castro. If I'm hearing you right, you're talking about being at Sandy Beach Park and the view shed from there?
Yes.
From the beach, the shelters, et cetera?
Yes.
And then that not being a structure, not impacting that is what I'm hearing you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because just as it is, the property lines kind of parallel your view shed. So there's no point that sticks out like I figure there might be. So I went out and identified the two markers and found that from Sandy Beach, there's nothing that's going to protrude out and obscure one's appearance of wild when you're standing at Sandy Beach Park.
Thanks.
Any other comments? Clerk Cole.
If I may?
Yeah.
All right, just aside from that, this is, for myself, it's an issue I've wrestled with because I think there's the green space argument that was made today. I empathize with that a lot. Greens, that is good wildlife. It's beautiful. I think I've had a hard time striking a balance between green space and viable residential property within city limits, beachfront, tucked in amongst other residences. I won't pretend that it's been an easy reconciliation for myself between the two of them. I also hiked around that property, and yeah, it's a great lot. I imagine the critters like it. It's beautiful. When the dust all settles for myself, I can't find a compelling reason not to vote for the rezone. Several reasons why, mainly being Sandy Beach is overwhelmingly residential. I don't think adding one more residence to that area drastically, or let me rephrase it, I don't think it negatively impacts the quality of life we have when we go to Sandy Beach Park and go walking to the petroglyphs, fish traps, etc., whether that be for tourists or for ourselves as residents. So I'll be voting for this.
Okay, thank you, Jay. Any other comments on this? Cindy?
Just one brief one. I just wanted to clarify that public use is not equivalent to green space, that it could be one part of public use, but a government building would also be allowable under that designation. So we really shouldn't be talking about it as being the same thing.
If I'm not mistaken, can't you build a residence on public use land?
The zoning says that the uses in public use are all of the uses that are allowed under single family, I think is the way that it's stated.
So then you could build a single family home on it? Public use land. So it's by changing this zoning, you're probably precluding it from, you know, being any public use. But I think for the benefit of the borough, for sales purposes, I think this rezoning is important. That's my position on it. So. Any other comments?
Please.
Nancy?
I'm going to support the rezone. The procedure that I'm familiar with when the state wants to keep space for public use is they withdraw it from whatever auction it's in and deed it to the city for use as a park. And it can't be used for anything else, or it reverts back to the state. So I'll be supporting the change in zoning.
Any other comments?
Well, you know, touching on what Member Strand said, I've had this posed to me by a few people throughout the town. And this is being devil's advocate. I'm not actually voting for this or anything, but just posing a scenario that land could then be used and make it into not a tent city, but an area where we could have, you know, visitors come in, be able to experience the breathtaking views, the wildlife, you know, scenery from that spot with a number of different, you know, tent pads back there. You know, I'm just proposing an option, an alternative view, you know, to this property. I mean, I feel that $180,000+ plus the property taxes, for perpetuity, will override the benefit we would receive from having a great area for tents. But there are people out there who really would like to be able to visit our town and be able to do it cheaper.
Understandable. Nancy?
Just one more comment. The houses that are already there don't seem to have impacted the wildlife. There are deer wandering through people's yards daily, And in the spring and fall, geese flock up in front of my house. That's how I know what season it is. And there used to be bears in the area. I've never seen a moose there, but I don't expect we will see a moose.
Never know.
So I don't think an additional residence will impact the wildlife.
Any other comments? Clerk, call the roll, please.
Bob?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Cindy?
No.
Mark?
Yes. Ordinance 2016-12 passes in its second reading. So that brings us on to item B. Ordinance 2016, an ordinance of the Petersburg Borough adjusting the fiscal year 2017 budget for known changes. I'll entertain a motion to adopt that resolution in its second reading.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Member Greger, seconded by Member Strand to adopt ordinance 2016-13. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, ordinance 2016-13 passes unanimously in its second reading. Excuse me. Now we're on to item 15, and it's a resolution 2015A, resolution 2016-26, a resolution authorizing the borough to grant a navigation easement for 3.39 acres of land near the airport. And I'm not going to go through the northeast this, northeast that, dedicated, but it's right at the, located at the 1601 Hagen Drive, and it allows the planes to fly over the land, if I understand it right. So entertain a motion for adoption of that resolution.
I so move.
Second.
Moved by Member Logadakis, seconded by Member Lynn to adopt resolution 2016-26.
I have a question.
Discussion?
What does avignation mean, and what does this mean for the lot? They want to pay us $7,000 and change. Will we be able to, while they're flying over, walk across it?
Steve, you want to explain? Please.
I can't speak for what the word means. I probably should have looked it up. What DOT started this is they called us and said, oh, by the way, we want you to give us a free easement so that we can meet the law, because evidently they should have had this all along since the airport's been built. And so I kicked it to P&Z to say, well, they need to look at this. And thanks to Liz and P&Z, they negotiated. Instead of free, we get $8,000. This property already has some restrictions on it, just because of its location, in the sense that it can't be built upon unless it's basically a public use type lot that has very limited ability. We can't rezone it, can't call it single family, can't build a house on it. Basically, we could put a park there is what it amounts to. So we have no intention of doing that. Simply, we're trying not to build any more parks if we can avoid it right now. So it's tacking on an easement that we already pretty much have in some sense internally to say we can't build certain things too tall, and that the DOT has the right to come in and cut trees if they happen to get too tall to get in their line of sight when it comes to the airplane traffic. So all that worked for what we have got it coded as for the moment.
Nancy.
So that means people will still be able to pick cranberries there? The airport has put a fence around some of the better cranberry bogs already, so.
I think within a certain.
They have no right to put a fence anywhere on that property. All they have is a piece of paper that says we agree not to build things on it that will restrict the airplane traffic.
And that we can fly over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
Have some permission to fly over the land.
Bob? Steve, if the intended use of that land changes, does that then revert back to the borough?
Yeah, it's an easement between us and DOT. So if DOT was ever to abandon that easement, yes. I mean, we just get it back. It's not owned by them. We just made them pay for the right to have the easement.
All
Eric.
And Steve, so if we were to, is there any way we could use this as a bargaining chip in order to have the state to be able to gain compliance? You know, they'll be held liable if something were to happen. Could we use this as a bargaining chip in our battle, in our dispute, you know, with the state docs?
I don't know. I mean, we thought we were doing pretty good when they wanted it for free and we got basically $8,000 for it. But because, and what it comes down to is we probably would have ended up giving them to it for free if we had to. We don't want to stop the airplanes from flying. So it's definitely something to put in our list of things that we have done for them that when they start talking, trying to negotiate on some of these other things. But not sure it would be the final straw that would make them do anything different, but we'll remember it.
Any other discussion on resolution 2016-26? Clerk, call the roll, please.
Jay.
Yes.
Bob.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
Eric.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Okay, resolution 2016-26 passes unanimously. I've been asked to take a 5-minute break, so we will reconvene at roughly 7:20. But that's not the purpose of it. We'll call the meeting back to order at 7:17 p.m. Next item on the agenda is resolution 2016-27, and it's a resolution authorizing the borough manager to convey a private access easement for a 280-square-foot portion of Lot 10, Section 35, Township 58S, Range 79E, Copper River Meridian, Parcel 01-014-125, located at 919 Sandy Beach Road, for the benefit of the owner of Lot N to use and maintain as a vehicle turnaround area. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this resolution.
So moved.
Is there a second?
And I'll second it for the sake of discussion.
Okay. Motion's been made by Member Logadakis, seconded by Member Wallhooter. Discussion. Nancy,
it was just brought to my attention here tonight, and I wish I would have done some research earlier, but authorizing the city manager to pass a resolution to placate this landowner on Lot N could be changed by another assembly. So there's no more security in having that turnaround for her use now, if we pass this resolution, than there will be in the future. I thought we had discussed a 20-foot zoning for utilities, which that little turnaround is now occupying. So if we were to pass this resolution, and if we were to grant her that little easement, the next assembly could come along and say, we're going to change this. So I'm not sure how that's going to give you any security at all in us passing this resolution tonight when you have opportunity to continue to use it, because I don't think anything's going to happen on that piece of property. If nothing's happened in 37 years, chances are nothing's going to happen for the next 37 years if this 20-foot right-of-way is indeed easement is in place. So that's kind of where I am at right with that. So that's just for discussion.
Cindy?
I'm not sure that that's correct. As I'm reading the title of the resolution, it says a resolution authorizing the borough manager to convey a private easement, not a public easement. And so I would assume that that would convey, the private easement would convey with the property when it changed hands. And we would no longer be the owner of the property, so we could not come back and pass a resolution changing that access.
I read the same way Cindy does.
Is that correct, Steve? Because my specific question to you earlier was, could we change this resolution for the future? And I was under the understanding that we could.
I believe they're correct, Kurt, because it's a private easement. So I gave you bad advice there. One assembly cannot tie the hands of a future assembly. But I think the fact that this is labeled a private access easement, I think, would give Chris some protection. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. But, you know, when it comes to budgetary things, when it comes to things like that, you guys can be overturned by a future assembly. A borough easement could be changed down the road by a future assembly. The fact that this is outlined, it's saying it's a private access easement, I think would stand pretty firm. But again, I'm not an attorney, so.
And it's also a utility easement, right? There's that 20-foot section there.
Yeah,
that's maybe why I thought maybe it was going to be. And who owns that 20-foot wide utility easement then?
Borough would. Excuse me, the 20-foot wide? No, that's a utility easement for the property owner.
This one here.
This to be part of that property.
Yeah, right.
The landowner would own it, whoever
right. owns
it.
Would own the right. land with the borough having the right to run the utilities through there.
Any other discussion? Questions?
There's more questions now.
I'll just come right out and say where I stand on this. I empathize with Ms. Norris and her historical use of that turnout, but I can't support granting her that easement. Ms. Norris, like the rest of us in Petersburg, should be using, find a way to use her driveway as it is, use the alternative route as it was. I don't know if it's a precedent we'd be setting or not, but I'd be a bit nervous to be granting a easement such as this upon request. So I'll be voting no.
Eric?
Perhaps I could just pose a question, too. So if we were to grant this easement, would that be for perpetuity, or would that be up until the point that the lot moves from borough ownership to the new ownership of the new owner?
I think it would be in perpetuity.
The way this is currently phrased, it would be forever unless... You know, I would view it as unless the owner of the easement chose to vacate it. So in this case, Chris.
Yeah, so it would be her right to have that pull out there as long as she wanted, basically.
The right way to do it, in my opinion, would be to, if this passed, then to also record it so it becomes a part. Chris would get a copy of it. She could record it. Future sales of that property would include this. And, you know, then it's on the record everywhere. Can an attorney void that at some point? That's beyond my knowledge. I doubt it. But I think it would, again, the fact that it's a private easement would give some protection.
Cindy?
Where this pullout is within the 20-foot utility easement, I don't think it fundamentally changes the character of the property even into the future. It's been that way for at least 37 years, and the property owner isn't going to be building a building right on top of that easement. So I think that we're essentially keeping the status quo. We're not really tying anybody's hands we're just allowing a situation that has existed for years to continue.
Eric?
Being devil's advocate on that, if you were to be the new property owner of Lot 10, and you wanted to build your house back, of course, along the water where anybody on Sandy Beach most often put their homes, how would you route your driveway to be able to avoid the easement that the borough imbued upon this new piece of land? Could that perhaps be an obstacle for the development of the property in the future?
Well, if I may answer, when you look at the map, what the borough is calling frontage is along the easement that allows Chris to access her property, that I believe is actually on the Evans's property. And I can't remember how many feet there are there. Is it 400 feet? But the driveway could come in at any point along that frontage area.
That answered up.
I mean, yes.
And potentially they could drive across. They could take it across the easement, and she would still have access.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very true. I just don't know if I were to spend $200,000 and want to build a $400,000 home on there, if I would want to have to contend with an obstruction like that. within my property. I absolutely understand about, you know, like, you know, the convenience of its use and its use, at, especially at nighttime during these times right now, backing up. But I wouldn't want to have the borough stand up for one landowner over another. You know, even though we don't have a landowner there, we're less likely to sell it, I feel, if we allow continued usage of the of this little pullout for a period.
If I may, by the same token, we're providing access for that property potentially across the Evans's property to get out to Sandy Beach Road. Mm-hmm. So you have to decide how you want to play that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I'm looking at the property right now, and it looks like the tip of the point comes directly to Sandy Beach. And there, so you wouldn't really be able, I suppose the new property owner would be able to deal with a turnout, and it wouldn't be an obstacle at all if they decided to come in off of that public easement that both the Evans and Ms. Norris uses, and they could just cut in a little sooner to be able to allow to be able to go around that easement that we potentially could offer. But is that something that we would want to do to the new owners?
Any other comments? I'd like to make a comment. I mean, this lot is like 1.3 acres, I believe, with the 20-foot easement now, and I don't know how big a lot has to be if you subdivide it, but this lot is actually subdividable, which makes it even more restrictive if there's a permanent easement there, even if it's only 280 square feet. In my opinion, maybe that's where a person wants to come in and have two separate driveways. I don't know. I'm just looking at whoever ends up owning this property if it gets to, when it goes to auction. So, and I don't know if there's enough room on the property owner on Ms. Norris's lot to, on the other side of the Evans easement, to put another little pullout, maybe even across from this one. I haven't been down there to look, you know. So. So I don't think I'm going to support this easement, especially knowing that it's going to be in perpetuity. Bob?
Yeah, I've been down, I've looked at it, I've drove it, I've turned around, and I got, as I was telling Chris, I've got empathy with her, and my heart's in her because of her long-term use, but my logic goes a different place, and I come back at it is that if I was a landowner, I certainly wouldn't want a little piece carved out as it. I'd want all the options available to me as a landowner if I purchased that lot. And so I have to say I would vote against this.
Any other discussion? Any other comments? Discussion?
We've already done that so that Chris can access and the Evanses can access their property to get to Sandy Beach Road. So it's not any different than what has already been done in that area, only this is a much smaller piece of property.
Okay, if there's no other comments, will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Mayor, could I just add one more thing here? On that 20-foot private access and utility easement, what sort of restrictions would be placed on the new landowner of Lot 10 on building structures or utilizing that? Would there be any instructions?
I don't think you could build any structures on it. It's kept there for underground utilities or power lines or...
Right, so it's unlikely anything will be done there, right?
As far as buildings.
Yeah, so even if we don't grant this 280 square foot to Ms. Norris, it's unlikely that it'll be taken away from her anytime soon.
I would hope not.
Well, you know what I mean? I mean, could the new landowner say that easement belongs to me and I don't want you to... Is that part of that land sale?
Yes.
Yeah.
Steve, you
have even though it's supposed to be for utility easement there?
It's a utility easement.
And the city owns it? No.
No, it's...
Well, then it would be private. Okay.
The landowner.
Okay, yeah. So now I'm finally clear on that. Okay.
You know, it's Carl. You may have run into this. You have any words of wisdom on this one. I mean, utility easements, as a general rule, you can't build on. You're left with, it's for the purpose of getting a power line out to the main road, water lines.
Yeah, that's correct. The purpose of utility easement is for future development of that lot. As far as what can be done on that, you can't build a structure, because that might impact the ability to develop the lot with utilities. You can clear that property, but you can't build a structure, can't build anything permanent. It's quite possible that whole 20-foot could be leveled and paved. The easement would still be in effect, because she could still use that property. A lot of things that could happen that might not be the best for Ms. Norris, but it would be up to the new property owner as what happens to that.
Carl, if I might. So do you see, in your experience, do you see easements like this existing throughout the borough, with little chunks of property taken out of existing properties?
There's quite a few, yeah.
How are they typically used? Is it an arrangement done between the borough and an existing property owner at the loss of a fellow property owner, or is this when a borough property and then just, I guess I'm trying to understand about how it's used most, like, or how you've seen it used most.
Probably most of what I see is the borough needing to provide service to a certain property that may not be accessible directly from a right-of-way, so an easement is developed or requested. It's two parts. The borough is obviously asking for it, but the property owner that's going to be served, or property owners that would be served, is also asking for it. And oftentimes, it owns part of the property that we're trying to use. So it's generally not very controversial, because the work that's going to be done, the development of those utilities, is going to benefit the owner of the lot. In this case, utility easement is already in use. Not quite. The electrical line is right on the property line, I believe. The water and sewer that would go into Lot 10 would have to use that 20-foot easement. Not have to, I guess. It's their lot. They can do anything they want with it. But if it was subdivided, that's where it becomes important to have that easement in place. Question?
Yeah. So you're saying that just typically the borough uses it for emergency vehicle access or utility trucks and other types of purposes.
Well, not necessarily vehicular access. There's a lot of times utility easements are for underground utilities or overhead utilities, and a road isn't even built. It's through somebody's yard or what appears to be their yard. You know, it's an easement. They can't build anything there, but the land is dedicated for that use, so there's something put in the ground or in the air that serves that property, but not necessarily a road.
Any other discussion before we call the roll?
Thank you.
Okay, Mindy, will you please call the roll?
Mark?
No.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
No.
Nancy?
No.
Bert?
Yes.
Eric?
No.
Jay?
No.
Okay, the motion to grant this easement, resolution 2017-27, fails 5-2. We're on to 15C. It's a resolution. It's number 2016-28. Of resolution in support of full funding for the state municipal harbor grant program in the fiscal year 2018 state capital budget, and entertain a motion to adopt that resolution.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Member Greger, seconded by Member Lynn to adopt resolution 2016-28. And just for a little note, this is one of the ones that the AML board supported, but whether the legislature funds it or not, who knows? So any other discussion?
Yes, Bob? Mr. Mayor, this was one of them that the policy committee had a real hard time with. And I personally also have a hard time with it from the standpoint that I agree with the idea that we need to put money in for the harbors in the state of Alaska, no problem. But the timing, I think, is absolutely wrong. I frankly think it should have not been passed out of committee. But and the reason I say that is because we'll have a resolution that essentially says, you know, we support the governor, or we support that the legislature balance the budget. We're now asking the governor to say, oh, by the way, governor, we'll take we want $18 million here. And then at the same time, we take some of the options away from the governor. He's already told us that we're going to lose some revenue sharing, or have the potential of losing more revenue sharing. We've had to take $112,000 of our own money that we had set aside for debt service on the school bond. If that goes through next year, then the people in the service area one is obviously going to have to pay more money. But yet we're saying we still want $18 million more in the state. I would rather see us take care of the debt service first, myself in the state, and also several other things like maintain some of the revenue sharing that we have before we put this as a high priority. That's where I come from. Okay, and sure. I know I think you're in a different ball game there, Mark, but you're on that.
That same discussion was had at the business meeting at AML on Friday morning. Person brought up to pull this resolution, and I can't remember how it passed or failed, but it was pretty significant support to keep it in, just because of what the fishing industry does for the state.
Right.
Number one, you know, job supporter in the state, or, you know, supplier in the state. So they felt the harbors were important. But whether the legislature funds it or not, you know, who knows? Cindy?
I guess I'd have to agree with Bob. And I've been on the fence about this one because our harbors are so important to our community. However, in the resolution itself is the language saying, whereas during the last 10 years, the backlog of projects necessary to repair and replace these former state-owned harbors has increased to over 100,000, and during the last 10 years, the Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Program has only been fully funded twice. And that's when times were much less lean than they are now. So I agree. We may be inadvertently trying to tie the hands of the legislature without really understanding what the full implication is.
I agree the need. No, that isn't my concern on it.
Could I ask a question of Glo? Hey, Glo, isn't this harbor grant money funded by fuel tax at the fuel dock, a portion of it anyway?
Well, there's no specific designation, so it comes out of the
I was under the impression that they tax us.
They take a whole lot of money
from us, we're kind of paying for it in a sense when we buy fuel. So, in a sense, so I'll be supporting this because I'd hate to throw my fuel tax out the window and let education. You know, I have nothing against education.
Chloe, you had a comment.
One comment, just for you to know that this is really the only avenue harbors have for funding. Whenever we go to the state for funding for various harbors, they say, well, the only established route to get money from the state for these particular facilities is through this particular grant. So it is essential to keep it alive, and I guess that's what we're so scared of, is that if there isn't support, it will go bye-bye forever. And then, you know, we kind of had a gentleman's agreement when we took these failing facilities off the state's hands, that this avenue would always be there available. Now, there have been times that it hasn't been even funded. During Governor Palin, she didn't fund any of it. But it's always been a portion. Last year, there were $21 million in requests, and they funded 4.6, which wasn't even funding one harbor. So, you know, it's varying degrees of what they support. But we're scared that if it goes away, it'll never be resurrected. So I think that's.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that comment, because if we don't ask for it, even if, you know, they're going to think it's not needed. Not, maybe I know they know it is necessary, but I've got a feeling the legislature might not fund us, even if the governor puts it in his budget, like I believe he's going to. So, I mean, requesting it is, you know, I don't know if they make paper airplanes out of half the resolutions they get or what they do, but so, yeah, Nancy?
Point of clarification, our contribution would be 100% of the design and permitting costs and 50% of the construction cost, or will we be putting a slug of cash into this account?
This is just, we're asking the state to fully fund this grant program where you apply, and if you have to give 50, there's two, there's a tier one and a tier two.
Right, there's tier one and tier two, and the requesting harbor has up to $5 million in requests, and it is for all of it. Like when we did the North Harbor, all we could afford was $3.5 million, and so we went to them, through this program and got $3.5 million. We didn't have $5 million to request a full $5 million match.
So we aren't actually putting money into
Nope. Okay. And these, at the bottom of the first page, these are the specific communities that are put in requests this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not. We're just helping Cake and Wrangell and all those places.
Mm-hmm.
That helped us when it was our turn.
Okay, so any other discussion on this resolution? Well, it's not like their money's coming out of their ears, but and this was supported by AML, like I said, so not that we have to support it. Clerk, call the roll.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
No.
Jay?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Okay, resolution 2016-28 passes with a vote of 6-1. Now that brings us to resolution 2016-29, a resolution in support of the addition of Port and Harbor employees to the list of employees covered by Alaska Statute 12.55.135. Entertain a motion to adopt this resolution.
So move.
Second?
Second.
A motion made by Member Wallhuter, seconded by Member Greger, and just for a note, the AML didn't pass this resolution. There was some concern of what it could happen, and maybe Steve could clarify this more about if they, this is just what it says, that doing so would establish a minimum sentence for defendants convicted of assaulting or harassing Port and Harbor employees equal to that established for peace officers, firefighters, correctional employees, emergency medical technicians, paramedics, ambulance attendants, or other emergency responders, or medical professionals. And there was a question raised on the floor up there whether this would police officers and stuff have, I think, get better, for lack of help me out, Steve.
Be happy to. The concern that was voiced at AML
retirement
was that Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 employees, there is a special program for police officers, EMTs, firemen, where their retirement dates are different, their benefits are a little bit different, their contribution rates are a little bit different. And the concern on the floor at AML was that if we list the harbor employees in this same bucket, are we opening ourselves up to them then qualifying for those improved benefits? Which there's a cost that comes along with that that would hit the borough, the state, whatever. The resolution specifically just talks about the statute, and I think Mindy's got that statute here somewhere, is purely related to naming these people, adding them to the list. It doesn't say anything about benefits or changes to PERS. But I think people were concerned that one, if it did get added to this list, then somebody's going to come back around behind it and go, well, now that it's on the list, they should be get the same benefits that police officers and such do. So it's kind of a jump in logic. I don't know that it's true, but that's the concern that was voiced by AML.
Steve, in committee, there was quite a discussion about liabilities of the municipalities associated with this in addition, and also the responsibilities, I'm not using the right word, but essentially putting more burden back on the boroughs related to those employees if something happened. Was there any discussion in on the floor when that came up?
No, that didn't come up at all.
Not that I heard.
Hmm. And you know, my apologies. I know very little about this. I would, Glow might be able to help, and Kelly might be able to help. First I heard about it was when we were on the floor at AML, and they said there's a resolution. So I'm not overly educated on this issue.
This one came in at the 10th hour, so
got
to
it.
Speak.
Okay.
Yeah, Jay and then Nancy.
I failed to recognize any logic in that fear, just to lay that out there. For instance, looking down the line, EMTs, paramedics, ambulance attendants, like, do they fall into that same fear of that we'd be responsible for their personal liability? Does it? Are they?
Some of them actually are on that list.
Mm-hmm. All of them, though.
Sandy, do you?
If
know?
So, I can get the logic if they're all included on that.
There's a.
Go ahead, Steve. Thank you.
Yeah, on the enhanced benefits. I believe that entire list falls into that category,
including like our volunteer.
But I don't. But again, I'm doing this out of pure guesswork at this point, without knowing.
Totally, because right going in my head is like our volunteer EMTs. Does that apply to them?
Wouldn't apply to them.
The charge would apply.
Oh yeah, totally. So yeah, there's two separate things. Sorry,
not
Sandy.
Retirement.
Yeah, yeah. I should have clarified more. Yeah, that, look, wondering, trying to address that concern. This would be setting some PERS liability for us. So I go back to my original statement. I failed to see the logic of that concern. So, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jay. Nancy, you had a comment?
I won't be supporting this. And it says in here not just this list of people who are on the list. It says uniformed or otherwise clearly identified. So how would we clearly identify a harbor employee? By his Carhartts and gray sweatshirt?
They actually... Oh, go ahead. I'll let Glow answer this.
I don't know.
But they wear that identify who they are.
And they're the only ones that have that clothing.
Well, it has their name on it, the harbor staff, so. And they carry a clipboard and so.
But I don't think they're
easy to identify.
Cowboy hat?
Well, okay,
Bob.
I'm just saying they're easy to identify.
When we discussed this in committee, we're raising some of the same questions that came up there. And when we got all done with the discussion, I was more confused than I was when we started.
Right now.
And so I guess I have to vote no. Not that I don't support it, but I don't know enough to be able to say yes or no, so to speak.
Any other? Cindy?
I have a question of the chief. And in terms of potentially how might this impact our jail and your staff, is this implementable?
And we need to make sure that the audience can hear the response, please. Question for him as well?
Apart from Chief.
I didn't read anything into this resolution that would affect retirement, first off. If that is a concern, I think that, not to go too far down a rabbit trail, but we need to look at our correctional officers dispatchers who are functioning as correctional officers who do not get that retirement benefit right now. It's my understanding that they believe they were getting that benefit, but when we looked into it, they are not. I think that the statute here was designed to be an encouragement for people not to assault public officials. Mm-hmm. And it's that ounce of prevention, if you will, that makes a penalty just a little stiffer for assaulting police, firefighters, correctional officers, those sorts of folks. What I see missing here is that the resolution only dealt with the misdemeanor assaults. It didn't deal with the felony assaults under 1255.125. So we're saying we're going to hold folks more accountable for these assaults at a lower level, but not at a higher level. So I don't think we're really looking at things completely. As far as it impacting the jail, it's not going to impact us at all as a short-term facility. It could impact the state prison system if there was a rash of harbor master assaults. But I don't think it's I don't think it's going to be a major impact, although we did just have a person assaulted about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So it does happen. You know, we support the harbor. This harbor supports us late at night, so it can happen.
So what I'm hearing you say is this is not necessarily a bad idea, but maybe it needs a little bit more work before we would consider adopting it.
I don't know that it's a – I don't think it's a bad idea or necessarily a good idea. I think it's something that we need to look at and weigh. If we're going to support it, I think we need to support it at the felony levels, the more serious assaults, as well as the misdemeanor assaults. It doesn't seem to be very well put together. It doesn't seem like it was a comprehensive thought process here, if that makes sense.
And I believe this is a mirror resolution that the Harbor Board Association presented. Oh, isn't it glow? Isn't it?
I just say there, just, you know, and I think possibly why it's lessened is because it got a little too confusing when it was at the higher level of we don't pack guns, we're not, you know, enforcement, we are, but here's an example. Like you mentioned, about a month ago, we had an issue in the harbor late at night. I had an officer, my harbor security officer, assaulted, and luckily the police, we called them right away, they came down, they were assaulted as well. So that person was then charged and now is facing a criminal, a criminal issue. Had they just assaulted my guy, it would have been a far different thing. And so most of our harbor officers are working late at night, are seeing cast of characters, and a lot of times it is a scary situation that there might be more than one. There's been many, many instances over the years where act or things like that, and it's because the police are quick to respond that we actually get justice, mm-hmm. And as part of the issue. So I'm not sure. This has been milling around for a number of years, and it's gone to the legislature. This, I think, is the third year. It's always been these kind of questions brought up. Most of the financial end of it is the big question. And so I think it kind of got a little bit more milquetoast now to this point just to try and get something passed because it is an issue that all the harbors have.
Thanks, Glo.
Just a Kurt, quick question. Who's going to determine whether or not they've been assaulted? You know what I mean? Like a harbor employee, I mean, a police officer can pretty much determine because they're trained to know when an assault is, if you get at a belligerent guy and you don't like his attitude because he's intoxicated and maybe he takes a swing at you but actually doesn't, hit you, because he's that intoxicated, is that considered an assault? And if it's just a harbor employee, how is he then going to enforce that situation, is he going to write the citation or is he going to call you guys like they have done in the past?
If I could weigh in here,
please.
These are what we call sentencing aggravators. So when a person is charged with an assault and convicted, then the judge is able to sentence them to a harsher penalty because they assaulted a uniformed police officer or a clearly marked harbor master security officer. It doesn't have anything to do with actually finding whether or not an assault occurred. So it's just like any other crime. We would investigate it, forward charges to the district attorney, go through the legal process. Once they're convicted, these statutes allow a stiffer penalty for that assault that's been determined to happen by a jury.
So then the harbor staff who gets swung at then goes back and files a report even because he can't detain the person like you guys probably would have. So where does it go from there? I mean, I can see some real issues here on implementation on this.
This doesn't give the harbor any more or less authority to detain somebody or write a ticket or make a citizen's arrest or any of that thing. This is strictly after the legal process has run its course and it's time for sentencing.
Okay.
All this does is give the judge a little more teeth to deal with someone that's assaulted a public official, basically.
Thanks, Chief. Jay, did you have another?
No, I just wanted to hear from Glo before, and I already did, so I'm good.
All right, we're good. I can see where it might be a deterrent, but I don't know if people are going to know if they're going to get in a tussle with the harbor master that's going to, well, they should, just shouldn't do it anyway. So, I mean, I think I'm going to vote in favor of this resolution just because it gives a more severe penalty if someone gets caught doing it or convicted of it. So, Eric?
Eric, yes, I agree. You know, I'll be voting in favor for this also, but I wonder about the precedent that it perhaps sets. You know, where do we start or stop? You know, and you know, is it now? You know, it's harborer, and then is it, you know, borough employee, rec, you know, parks and rec staff, and you know, I feel that this could go all the way down. I mean, and opposed, it's just something to talk about, and then create a resolution, and then they'll get judged at a first degree as opposed to fourth degree for harassment. But
I can kind of speak. I mean, there are some states. Texas is a good example. All public officials would fall under something like this. So, and by the way, it doesn't include just physical. It includes somebody yelling and screaming at you to the point it becomes a nuisance. And so Alaska's not there, probably luckily. But you, it's hard to say where it would stop or, you know, I mean, I think these are some named positions that are likely to encounter people that might be less than happy in their current circumstances. I mean, you know, we have people who come into Parks and Rec who might be upset, but traditionally they don't get violent or don't, they're not in a position that's going to cause harm other than the 12-year-olds who run around and do stuff, and we take care of that. you know, our folks here at City Hall catch a lot of stuff from people related to bills and such. It generally doesn't get beyond some harsh words, and people storm out and calm down and come back. I think the harbor thing probably makes some sense because you've got, you're out there on the floats, you're wandering around, you know, it can be a rough crowd at times, and potentially this gives some added oomph to saying, you know, there's a little bit extra penalty if you, in fact, do something. Okay, I mean, again, I don't know a heck of a lot about this. This first I heard about it was we were sitting there at AML and people started arguing about it. So it's kind of hard to know what all of the steps and ramifications would be. But, I mean, I would put the harbor folks at a little higher risk for violence than Parks and Rec or my folks here, if that helps out.
Thanks, Steve. Any other discussion? Nancy?
I just think we should all be covered by equal assault. we should all have equal assault coverage. So including public works employees or borough assembly members or and we could all wear a necktie to be identifiable because it's our job is so important.
Okay, the resolution before us is just to add the Port and Harbor people to it. So unless we want to make an amendment and go through that discussion, we'll vote on the resolution as presented. Clerk, call the roll.
Kurt?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
No.
Jay?
Yes.
Okay, resolution 2016-29 passes with a vote of 5-2. And now that brings us on to approval of good investments lease application for assignment of Washington Alaska Properties LLC's Tideland lease located on the water side of 16 Singley Alley. It's Alaska Department of Fish and Game Dock. And it's parcel 01-07-474. I'd entertain a motion to approve this lease.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved by Member Greger, seconded by Member Walhooter to approve the lease of the Tidelands to Good Investments. Any discussion? Jay?
A question for the manager, please. Excuse me. Has this lease changed hands several times through the years?
Multiple times.
Like,
yes.
Like multiples and like?
I'm going to do this from memory because I don't
ballpark.
Have my original lease was 1984. It changed hands in 96, I believe, or 99. Anyway, and then again in 2001. And so there's been at least three to four change hands.
And have we ever denied denied someone's application for the lease transfer?
Not that I've seen. The file doesn't include, if somebody was asked and it was denied, it's not included in the file. I mean,
it would generally go with the sale of the previous sales. So following that, I can't see any reason not to approve this lease transfer, and I'll be voting for it.
Bob?
In the lease, it talks about having a plan for, excuse me, for the tidelands with a dock, I believe, and I think it was pretty specific about how, what had to be done. That was in the one that's in the current lease, Steve?
This is, there's an original lease, and then there's a bunch of amendments to it that are primarily just changing the rate throughout the years or changing the name of the person that's leasing it from the borough. When this was first brought to the then city council in the 80s, there was a development plan produced. And this development plan was taken to P&Z and approved, and the city council then blessed it after that. In the development plan, it talks about, related to that lease, that there would be, you know, steel pilings, a concrete, you know, dock, and gravel parking lot, because the lease includes the parking lot behind the Fish and Game building. So that's still in force. It's very old document, but that is the, when you look at the lease and it talks about the uses of the property, it refers directly back to this development plan and what the then city council approved. So there's been no amendments to that. No one's asked to change that use or to eliminate those pieces of infrastructure.
And the current dock has been removed?
I looked at it today, and the dock is there. The trestle or the pier that goes out, the whole surface is off of that, and the railings, and then the ramp is gone. And in the lease, Steve, doesn't it say it'll be kept in a maintained manner? Yeah, so they're actually...
There's several sections that talk about maintenance and that it must be kept in a usable state, must be maintained well, and that's actually in the lease document. So, in a sense, you could argue at this point that the current leaseholder is out of compliance with the lease. Now, again, there may be plans to fix it that I'm not aware of. So
that's one of my concerns, not knowing what the plans are, seeing the dock in a state of demolition and knowing the float goes or the dock itself goes dry at low tide. It's not as usable as it once was, and with the, you know, hammer sluice silting it in all the time, I don't know. It's just, it kind of raises a red flag for me. Glo, you have a comment?
Yeah, of course, I've been talking a lot to Charles about this.
Harbor Master.
Harbor Master. And he was the one that removed the, because he's working for the existing owner, and that's probably how this all came about, and I'm surprised he's not here today, but he also is in the process of working with Rick Braun to get a Corps of Engineers permit to dredge and to do the work around the float. So I think he is just in that process of accomplishing the rebuild. We have talked over the years, the current owner and I, about that facility just because of the, you know, the buildup and the silt and because of the pilings have corroded quite a bit. I've talked to him quite, you know. But anyway, Charles is, and that ramp and all that kind of stuff was just done in the last 6 weeks of removing it. And
I've noticed it taking place. Any other discussion?
No, just one thought. So the idea then on the table is to approve it as is with just passing on the current lease with the same schedule?
Traditionally, what has gone on is exactly that the lease would just be, ownership would change. That's up to the assembly. Or you can put conditions on it. I was looking at the date on this development plan. It's 1983. That gives you some idea. It's never been updated. Not that it has to be. I mean, it's still a living document. But, that's up to the assembly. If you can approve it, which means we can transfer it to this new company, that's been done several times before. You can approve it, you know, table it and ask for a new development plan or specify questions or something. It's entirely up to the Assembly.
Cindy?
I was inclined to vote for this, but then I'm looking at item 5 on the assignment of lease for good investments. And it says under landlord acknowledgement and consent that the lease is in good standing and the conditions and agreements contained in the lease have been duly paid and performed, and there's no known existing material defaults. But I'm hearing that that's not the case.
Mr. Mayor, may I?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Unless Glow's received something in writing from the current owner, which she may or may not, we have not either. So that's kind of why I'm using that development plan language. We have not heard anything from the current owner or Charles, and he's not the current owner, explaining what they're doing. They kind of probably should have. I mean, that's fairly substantial infrastructure that has been removed. We don't have anything from them that says, this is what we're doing, this is how we're going to do it, this is when we'll have it done. And that's generally something your body might want to have on your hands before you approve it. But it's a very thick file. I've tried to go through all of it. I don't know that there hasn't been improvements and changes throughout the years to that facility that aren't even documented in here. So I don't have much to go on. So.
I do know that part of the agreement with the property owner, the building owner, and the Fish and Game is that they will provide places for the Fish and Game boats to tie up. And currently, because of the siltation and it's not usable, they rent 2 stalls from the harbor. The owner of the building rents 2 stalls for the harbor for the Fish and Game vessels currently because they're not able to use this facility. So.
Sandy?
And that sounds all well and good, but item 4 says that this will indemnify and save harmless the assigner and the landlord from all actions, suits, costs, looses, charges, damages, and expenses in assumption of the lease. So by granting this without any conditions, we're saying everything is good and everything is not good.
Valid point.
Just looking at the lease and not saying it's a bad idea to do it, but I think we need, my mind, I can't vote for this until I see some kind of a plan and a guarantee that this is going to be in some kind of a good standard.
That's exactly where I was at. That's why I brought the topic up.
So maybe instead of not approving the lease, it would make sense to table it so it's not like we're denying it, and just until we get more information, we understand what the business plan is here. From that's just my opinion, but I can't make a motion.
I'll make a motion then that we table it until such time as we see a plan of what the future owner wants to do with that, particularly with the tidelands and that part of the.
What we would do would be direct us to the current leasee.
Okay.
That would be up to them to coordinate as far as how they want to respond.
I'll modify it and call it the direct leasee then.
And I'll second it.
Okay.
Okay, a motion's been made to table it until the time, there's no time certain, but until we get more information, we can bring it back at any time. And then seconded, and we'll talk with the current leaseholder, and he can negotiate with the person that's trying to acquire the lease. Any discussion on that? Motion to table it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, it's unanimous, Mindy, to table this until we get more information. Okay, next item on the agenda is F-16-326, approval of Randolph lease application for assignment of Alaska Commercial Electronics lease at 908 South Nordic Drive, parcel 01-01-0041. I'll entertain a motion to approve that lease.
So move.
Second.
Moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Lynn to approve the lease application for assignment from Alaska Commercial Electronics to the Randrips. Discussion? Eric.
Well, just like Mr. Whitethorn noted, I feel that a diversified business sounds like a very, I guess, like the most safe and stable plan. I applaud that idea. I feel that, you know, it's better to be able to have a business operating than not have one. And this is kind of disregarding waterfront A, B, you know, and all of the guidelines that we're following. This is just kind of is an opportunity for the borough to be able to benefit. I go back to my hometown, and, you know, we had a thriving community during a period when there was logging and such. And I go back down up there now, and our shopping center is half boarded up, and it's sad. It's very sad. I feel that's kind of the sign of a dying town. And if we are to end up with, if Mr. Lighthorn were to leave and leave a hole right there, and we start boarding up windows, then I feel that's kind of just the sign of like the death of a town.
Jay, and one thing I'd like to bring up, Mindy, do you have? Is that okay? We've got it. All right, never mind. Jay,
cool. Kind of echo somewhat some of what Member Castro said. I thought Mr. Whitethorn and Mr. Andrup spoke well to the topic. Yeah, myself, I don't think it is important to be very rigid and to make it only marine use. As a small business owner myself, the importance of growth in Petersburg. So if this resolution passes, I wish you luck in your endeavor, and therefore I would make a motion to amend the lease of parcel 01-01-0041, section 4.1, to include retail businesses allowed by the Petersburg Zoning Code.
Or second to that.
Second.
Second.
Okay, amendment's been made by Member Greger, seconded by Member Lynn, to modify this lease for the reasons he said. I can't remember exactly word for word. So, Mindy, you have it down? You do. You probably got it in print. So, can you let us deliberate a little more, please?
Sure.
So I'll lose track if I. So what we have is an amendment to the lease agreement. Any more discussion on the amendment? Which basically takes it so it's not, doesn't have to be directly commercial electronics. It could be numerous different things.
I just want to voice my violent agreement with Eric and with Jay. And Jerry, you made a really good point, and I understand you're still going to be operating out of your home. And your comment about establishing a baseline for what constitutes a waterfront activity, I think is really important, because even though your business was considered a marine business or a marine-related business, it didn't have to be in that physical location to still support the community, and I think that's something we really need to look carefully at. One point that I want to raise, I was talking to folks who were involved with the Chamber of Commerce retailers meeting, and Jody Tao just did a meeting with those folks to handle sales tax, help them figure out how to handle sales tax properly. In the last year, and you can correct me, Steve, if I have the figure incorrect, there were $8 million less sales in Petersburg Borough than there were the year before. I think it's really important for us to support our retail communities and our business communities, and I don't think this is fundamentally going to change how our waterfront is going to be able to function, so I will be voting for it.
Any other comments on the amendment?
No, I'm in violent agreement with all of them. You know, I think that the times are changing, and I think that our zoning and our businesses are going to have to change with it in order to survive. And I think anything we can do to help, and I agree with you, Cindy, is I think we need to go back and look at our zoning and see what we need to do to help foster whatever we can.
So we're going to vote on the amendment to. And this, the way it's written, if I'm not mistaken, is for the full term of the remainder of his lease, correct? 33 years. Is that right? Okay. So on the amendment, call the roll, please, Mindy.
Cindy?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Okay, the amendment to change the requirement from this lease transfer, if it works out between the two parties involved, It's not required to be marine electronics stores. Basically just commercial, I think. Jerry, you have a comment before we vote on the main amendment or main motion?
My lease changed. If something happened.
That's what we just addressed.
You just did it.
Pardon me? What I was going to say is, if something happens that the Randrups decide after all this,
that would be
that
a totally
they're
separate.
Not going to buy it.
That would be a totally separate issue, I think.
The lease change will still be in effect, right, to retail business. So if I found another business,
let me get a clarification from the manager's opinion.
Unfortunately, no, because your request came in after this packet. They can't consider that tonight. I know it sounds odd,
but
they're
it can
amending.
Be considered at a later date.
Yes, we would have to go back through the process again and bring it back in front of this group.
So does that mean that every time I get a buyer, I have to come in front of the group to get the lease changed?
No, I would highly suggest that you tell us you want to proceed regardless. I mean,
yes.
Tell Mindy.
Absolutely.
And we'll start that process.
Is that open to my market?
Totally separate than your possible sale. We'll run it through the process, and there's a series of steps to go through that.
Okay.
And one or the other will finalize themselves and could be stopped or not.
Is that something that would take assembly action? So if we'll have it on the December 5th meeting agenda.
We don't have time? Because it starts, I believe, doesn't P&Z have to weigh in? Maybe not on leases.
Well, they did on this instance. Case, didn't they?
So mm-hmm.
Look into it if we can put
we
it on.
We will get it back to the assembly as soon as we possibly
there
can.
There we go.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Okay, so now we're having an amended motion, and I think we all know what it is. Now we're on the main motion to approve of the transfer of the Alaska Commercial Electronics lease to the Randrups. Any discussion on that?
We're all violently agreeing.
We're all violently agreeing. Clerk, call the roll.
Well, I have to because I'm on the Harbor Board.
Nancy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Cindy?
And yes.
Okay, so the lease transfer is approved.
For how many years?
33. The remainder of a 55-year lease. Okay, the next item on the agenda is 16-325, and that's authorization for Mayor Jensen to accept for public use and for public purposes the real property dedicated to the public for the Mallard East and West subdivision, including easements, right-of-ways, alleys, and roadways. We've entertained a motion to authorize that.
So move.
Second.
Moved by Member Walhutter, seconded by Member Greger to authorize the endorsement of the Mallard subdivision plot as presented to us. It's been changed since the last time, and it's acceptable with you, Steve? And I don't know, Carl, did you look it over? Or did you have the department heads look? Steve, you could answer the question if it's...
Yes, mental health, to our surprise, took it back, redesigned it, took the three smaller lots out of service, and redrew the lines into something that is much more appropriate for that part of the island. So Liz looked at it, and she thinks it's much, much better. And so, yeah, staff is recommending that we accept the, I guess it's the easements.
Okay, perfect. Any other discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Okay, that passes unanimously. Next item on the agenda is H, and it's 16-327. That's authorization to accept a $56,000 grant from the Division of Homeland Security 2016 NOAA Tsunami Hazard Mitigation Program. Entertain a motion to accept that.
So move.
I'll second.
Motion's been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Loggadakis to accept this $56,000 grant. Is there any questions? Or do we need an explanation from Sandy? Yeah. With Bob?
Just a question. Is there any, is it going to cost us anything as part of that grant? Or do we have any other obligations?
Sandy Dixon, Fire EMS Director. About a year ago, I was approached by the state and asked if we wanted to be included in this grant. And I said, great, as long as you guys are going to do the work, we'll take it. And I talked to Steve, and he was on board with it. And then when they said, yay, you got the grant, I went back to Steve and said, are we okay with this? And as long as it doesn't cost us any money, yes, we're okay with it. So at this point, it will not cost us any money. They'll pay for the RFP and the advertising for that, and then all the work. But they did the cost estimating. So I just have to do some of the legwork and then find contractors with the RFP. But it should not cost us any money, and we are not obligated to any matching funds. And I have made the determination that if it goes over or we can't do the project for what they authorized, I'll stand firm with my agreement with Steve, and we'll give the money back.
Sounds good.
And just for clarification, there is a significant difference between a tsunami warning siren and the one that we currently have, which kept me awake for several hours on, you know, several years ago, because it's right by my house.
The siren that we currently have is a civil defense siren. It's very old. We're not getting rid of that one. This will enhance our capability of notifying the community in the event of a tsunami, and we can still use it for fire notification. And, yes, we're working with the school to try to alleviate the siren either not working or working too well.
Thank you, Sandy. Any other questions of anybody or of the assembly?
No.
Clerk, call the roll.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, that passes unanimously. We have one letter I received. Is there any other communications that anybody has? It's from the State of Alaska Division of Homeland Security, and they're just thanking everybody that was involved in the, the Southeast Alaska Earthquake Simulator Tour, and they say they couldn't have done it without our help. There was over 200 individual residents that had attended, 200 students as well. Then 40 local residents also attended the hazardous materials emergency preparedness training and tabletop exercise. And they thanks a lot. It was a success. So I thought I'd read that. I didn't want to read six paragraphs, so I just summarized it. So any other communications or recognitions? Oh, then there's no items under assembly discussion that I see.
Matt Briner needs a pat on the back for the lights. I mean, it's going to be spectacular, I think. So anyway, I encourage anybody who wants to brighten the community up. And so good on you there, Matt.
Yep. It'll be sparkly all over town. Mm-hmm. So seeing no other recognitions or communications, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
I'll second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Kelly.